Hello, everyone. Welcome back. This is Julie Knudsen with the podcast Training the Pointing Labrador, episode number 100. And it's interesting, we're having this 100th episode. That's a lot. That's a lot of talking. And I've heard a few people say that they've listened to every one. Oh, my goodness. You're going to have nightmares where my voice is creeping into your sleep. That's a little scary. But thank you for people that are doing that. I appreciate that. I hope that you're getting something useful out of this. But here we are having this 100th one of these in the middle of a pandemic, a worldwide pandemic, where many of us are kind of just stuck where we are. Of course, I'm always stuck. I am stuck in my job, so I'm not really stuck at all. So, gosh, my thanks goes out to all the people that are out there, the frontline people. You know, the policemen, the nurses, the doctors, the firemen, the people that are in the stores and getting the food delivered, and the truck drivers, and all of those people that are making it okay for those of us that are not out there in the middle of it. Much appreciation to all of you for what you're doing. And so my life hasn't changed much other than there aren't groups of people coming over here anymore. So I get to just work hard still. Not a bad way to have a living. So what I'm going to do today is sort of compile the nature of a lot of the questions that I've gotten over recent times here, and try to discuss. Everyone has a different description of roughly the same issue with their dogs, and I'm going to talk about it. And then for those of you that have specific questions about stuff, right now, to the best of my ability, I am not, you know, I'm a better dog trainer than I am a filmmaker. Let's just say that. So for anybody watching my stuff on Facebook, I apologize, but it's the best I can do. But what I'll do is I'll try to take some of the questions that I get online on some very specific things, and see if I can film a little segment so that I can demonstrate the answer that you're looking for. But the category question that I want to address is, how do you get a dog to not, and then it's fill in the blank. How do you get a dog not to be distracted by other dogs? How do you get a dog not to sit down on woe? How do you get a dog not to, I mean, there's just so many in just everywhere. How do you get a dog not to sit slow? How do you get a dog, not to run around the water? There's just so much stuff. So I want to take a general, there's all these questions, and I want to take a general philosophical approach to training dogs where you don't deal with the not to's. And there's one film I'm going to try and do today that I had a real specific question right on Facebook where I'm showing just hold. I've got a young dog that's just been here. I mean, it's just like the second time they've been in training or first, I don't remember, doing anything. And I'm just getting them to hold a bumper. And so there was a question about how do you get them not to chew on it? And I'm going to demonstrate that if I can here in a little while when I go film some of this stuff. But so I want to talk about that. So given the number of dogs that I train every day, all the time, forever, I really don't deal with the not-tos. I can't because when you are, let me explain it this way. I don't care what kind of, how do I get my dog not to do this? Whenever you're doing that, you are responding to your dog. And by that, I don't mean paying attention and noticing. I mean your dog is dictating your actions, your behaviors. The dog is doing something and then you are responding. That's the reverse of what you want when you're training a dog. And I hope I can do a good job of getting this across. But that's really it. When your dog is doing things and then you respond to that, the dog is controlling the situation. And when the dog is controlling the situation, we are not in a learning mode. So for a dog to be acquiring new understanding, new patterns, new responses, means that they need to be responding to what you're doing. And it's in all of this stuff. How do you get a dog not to sit down on woe? How do you get a dog not to hold the bumper like a cigar? How do you get them not to, you know, run around the water? All that stuff means that the dog is doing something and you're going, oh, wait, I don't like this. So it's too late when that happens. The problem is not what the dog is not doing. The problem is that you are not the one driving and the one showing the dog what it is to do. And that sounds like an oversimplification, and it sounds like I'm being a little bit, I don't know, trite about this, but I'm not, because I can just use my own experience. So I get new dogs all the time, don't know what they know, don't know what they think, don't know how they respond, don't know what, you know, is in their head already, programmed from their time with their owners. So I get that all the time. You know, you guys with your one dog or two dogs, you know your dog. So you're not at a disadvantage unless you've already created a bunch of stuff and you kind of have to go back and start over again. So when I get these new dogs in and we start with basic obedience on a leash, that's the first thing we do. And I don't know what they know. I do find out because I see what they tell me when I put the leash on. You know, a lot of dogs turn their heads away. You're trying to put a leash on your head, they turn their head away. Okay, that tells me what they think about somebody coming at them with a leash. They don't want to do it. They're not, you know, going, oh, good, we're going to go work. They're going, I don't want to do this. Okay, so whenever I see that, let me just say this. I'm not going to go, oh, look at this dog. He keeps turning his head. When I get one of those guys in, all right, when I come in, I have my leash in one hand, and I get hold of the underside of their neck up kind of by their jaw so that I have it. Not choking them to death. I just get a hold of them. If they have a collar right there, I hold on to that. If not, I just grab a little bit of skin and neck, hold their head there, put the leash over it. I no longer have a head turning problem. All right. I just prevent it from happening because that's not okay. It's not okay for them to avoid what we're trying to do. And I'm not going to punish them. I'm not going to argue with them. I am going to just have what I want to have happen. I'm going to grab on the underside of their neck, put the leash on them, and proceed with what we're doing. So right there, I'm driving the situation. I know what they're going to do. They've told me. So I'm going to make sure what I want to have happen happens. It's not cruel. It's not mean. I'm not being tough. I'm just making things happen the way that they need to. And when I do that with some consistency, and then they learn that this training is not something yucky, that it's actually, you know, it's challenging and it's an interesting thing to do, then I tend to not have to worry about that anymore. So that's a thing where I don't have a turn my head away from the leash thing. I just come in front of it and have what I want to have happen. And so that's kind of the approach you take everywhere. Now, in obedience, how do I get my dog to sit more quickly, right? Okay, by making them sit more quickly. My means of that is, one, you have them on a leash, you need to make sure they know what sit is. First, you have to teach, whether it's just pushing, you know, pulling up on the leash and pushing down on the bottom. But you have to make sure that, excuse me, they clearly understand what sit means. And now we're going to go in there, and again, I like my plastic wiffle bat, and I come in there and say sit, pop them right on the bottom, and they have to sit down. And I do it with the correct timing so that they don't have time to flare out or flare in or back up or do something else. It's sit, leash pulled up, bottom popped, and the bottom goes down straight. So I don't let any of the problems on sit develop. Now, every now and then you got a dog that really wants to be resistive, so you've got to be a step ahead of them. That's a lot more difficult than it is a dog that's kind of willing, going, sure, I'll sit. So whatever your dog tells you, whatever their speed or response, if they've got a big avoidance thing, then you have to come in front of that and keep them from avoiding things. Just like putting a leash on a dog's head that wants to turn their head away. If a dog wants to flare or back up when I want to sit, I've got the leash. And they're just not going to do it. I don't hurt them. It isn't this big, brutal thing. I just don't let them do it. And I don't do it in a luggy, tuggy, slow method. I just pop that leash right up, and they have to be right where they need to be. Now, sometimes for me, when I get these 80-pounders that have gotten away with it a lot, you know, that's a real muscle check. But you have to do it anyway. You can't go, well, I can't. He just gets away with it. You just can't let that happen. So you can make them sit, you can make them sit squarely, and you can make them sit, you know, rapidly by making sure that's what happens. So all of these things, that happen are similar to that. Now let me talk about the sit down on the wall thing. I've had some dogs. I had one dog I never could get not to do that in training. Fortunately, in the field, you know, then he would just do his, he would point and stay, and that was good. Unless you got up and we got worried, then he'd sit down. There's one dog that I was not real, real perfect at that. But generally, if you don't want a dog to learn to sit down on when you're doing the wool breaking, again, understand when I do it, I don't do it out in the field. I don't want any bad habits out in the field. I don't want any concern or anxiety out in the field. So I do all of my control training, not in the field, but in the yard. And so when I start the woe, right, I have the leash around there, like the baggage handle, right? So it's on their chain and then it's around their waist, not hurting anything. And then I can just keep those dogs from sitting down. And so I don't do anything stepping away from them where I, you know, at first it's hard. You just tell them, whoa, and they just have to stop and stand there. And boy, they may want to sit down and sit down. That's why you have the little handle on them. Don't let them sit down. That's a hard thing. It takes really several days usually to get them to stop and not sit down when you've been doing this popping on the bottom and making them sit down. You don't do this, teach all this stuff at the same time, okay? You don't, you know, get your obedience good. And so that you've got in their head that, oh, I need to listen and pay attention. You got them in a learning mode, not an avoiding mode, right? And after that, we're going to go do this, you got to stand on all four legs and stay up thing, which we call woe. For them, it's just in the beginning, just, I got to stand up and stay here. So you don't let them sit down. And it may take several days. And you don't want to think, okay, I got this, and then step away, and then they sit down, and then you go back, and you pick them up, and then you step away, and then they sit down. Right? You stepped away too soon. It may take, with some of these dogs, quite a bit of time before you can step away. They need to really fully grasp that woe means to remain standing. You know, for the show ring dudes, you know, they have the stand command or whatever they have. It's the same, similar thing when you begin. Stay up on all fours, right? Just stay up on all fours. So people get in a hurry because they want to get to the fun part of the wool stuff, you know, where you're throwing things and shooting guns and tempting them and birds and all that stuff. If you don't have that, you got to stand up and stay there. Don't move forward on that. Don't move forward. Have them up and make it a habit before you get very much further into it. Now, if for some reason, right, your dog's been good and you've had, you know, some consistently good just standing there things, and one day your dog kind of just drops their bottom, just go over there and put it back up. Just say, whoa, no negative things. No negative things. Because I think sometimes what people overlook is that sit is, for in the retriever world, and yes, in the pointing retriever world, sit's a big deal. You know, these guys have to sit in the duck blind or sit in the goose blind or lay down. They have to, in competition, they have to sit there and watch things go down. And that's a big power deal. Sit is how we often address jumping and other kind of problems, is this power command to sit. So sit has traditionally been the way you relieve in training pressure, is to sit down. That's always a safe thing. And then people work on their remote sits way too early. They do all that stuff. So sit is a big deal. So now we're teaching them not to sit. And when they get a little angst or a little tired or a little worried or a little I don't know what, they will default to that. Now, assuming that you have clearly taught them to stand, and every now and then they do that, I just go put them back up like a nothing thing. If I'm going to come in there with training pressure because they sat down, I'm not sure what they're supposed to make of that. I don't know what you would make of that. It doesn't fit with the whole training program that you've got. So in case they do, on a rare thing when they sit down, just go with the hand under the belly with, you know, just say whoa and make it not unpleasant so that standing up was a good thing. Okay. A good thing. And that will tend to make that not happen again. Every now and then, you know, it does. Now, if it's happening with consistency, then you went ahead too far, or they got the whole training pressure thing unclear in their mind. And that's a hard one to explain. Because when you got the hard-driving dogs, and they're hard-driving, and you got them to sit on a whistle, or you get them to stop, and so you've got this hard-driving, fast-response kind of deal, and then we get over there on whoa and go, just stand there, and don't respond to anything. Sometimes, if that's a little bit out of balance, they're going to default to that sit-down, because there's so much of that hard and fast response in the regular retriever training. Sometimes it's that. And if you're a little out of balance, understand that. You can't get mad at the dog, because anytime you're upset or there's correction or whatever, because they sat down, they want to sit down more. So you have to have an awareness of the dog's state of mind and way more patience, maybe. Way more patience, and don't take the little suitcase handle off until you know you can. So, you know, there's not a distinct answer for this. You have to figure out what caused it, and generally it's because too soon. Moving on too soon or out of balance because you're doing so much of that of other control retriever training and they keep defaulting to that mindset while you're doing this, just stand there and relax type of stuff. So again, we're going to try and prevent the problem from happening as opposed to, you know, how do I correct this? Another one that comes up a lot, you know, how do I get them not to run around the water? Well, I only know one way to not get them to run around the water. When they're little, I never put them in a place where they can't, okay? So for little young guys over which you do not have handling control in the water, don't throw something that they can do that. And if you have a young dog and then you take them hunting in the cold ice water and they're so awesome, and then in hunting because you want them to avoid the ice, they run all around the water a lot, and then you want to come back and do the regular, you know, water training for competition, that's pretty unfair. I'll just say that. That's a tough one. You better have a good dog that can be brought back from that when running around and getting a flyer was, you know, the most fun thing in the world. So with young dogs, never, and I mean never, don't set them up where they can run around stuff. And what I've seen, I've done it myself, and what I've seen a lot of people do is you get these young hard chargers, you know, they just going out there hard and they just coming back hard. And they're so enthusiastic about going after something that they don't even stop to think about a different way to get there. But eventually they will, because they like it so much and they've had a little bit of experience now. So now they go out there and go, wait, if I just ran around that other side and then jumped in, that seems like it'd be a lot faster. And you don't have any way to stop them. And if you just know and call them back, what are you knowing them off? When you have a dog that doesn't handle and they're going after that bird the way you sent them, the fastest way possible, and they haven't been taught there's rules like go straight, right? And you tell them no, what are they supposed to do with that? Are they supposed to go, oh my goodness, I think that I'm not supposed to go the fastest way, but I must take the greatest amount of water. They just don't do that, you guys. So I would never with a young dog that I didn't have handling control over set up something where they can run around. Just wouldn't do it. In the old days, they used to, before the Water Force Swim By program came up, they would have people, they had a name for it, I can't remember, that would sit in the bushes on the side with big old whips and stuff. And so when the dog, instead of coming back in the water, would start to run around, they would whip the snot out of the dog. Oh, you know, and that might have worked with some, and I bet others went, but never go near the bushes, near on the edge of the water. There are boogeymen in there. I've seen that. When I first got started, there were people that still did that. And, you know, I don't know, some dogs could take that, but some others, they'd never go anywhere near the edge of the water again. But so to get a dog, to teach a dog, if you want to be fair and do it the best way, fairest way, fastest, easiest way, is once you have them through the T program or whatever you do so that they handle on land, they go when told and they stop when told and then they go again and they take casts, you transfer that same program over to the water. Dogs do not transfer land to water directly. Now, there's probably the rare dog that does, but dogs don't. Land is one thing because it's fast and you go the most direct way there. Water is a different thing. And dogs naturally don't take the most amount of water. They don't naturally just go straight at something if there's a way faster way to get there. Neither would you if you were going out there to get it. So there is the swim by program through which you teach a dog to get in the water, stay in the water, get out, get back in, and all you teach them all, you know, and when I stop you in the water, you just turn around and look at me. You generally have to teach that to dogs, you know, because no dog just turns around and treads water. But they can be taught that, so they calm down and wait and then take your cast. And casts in the water tend to be get in or get out casts, not geometric casts. You know, an angle back cast in a narrow channel either means stay in and go that direction all the way to the back or means get out. It doesn't mean 45 degrees until you get a dog that's way experienced. So to have a dog that understands that it needs to get in the water where appropriate and then you have the means by which you can control it requires going through the swim by program. And I actually have some videos, little snippets, because it would be a long video if I showed the whole thing. And it's a multi-day, multi-step process. But there's a whole process where you teach him, get in, get out, you know, get in, stop, look at me, take water, whatever direction I cast you, stay in the water, or get out of the water. When you have that, then you have all the tools to make sure that your dog understands, get in the water, stay in the water, get out, get back in, whatever it is. So that there's a whole program designed just for teaching that specific thing. And it is the easiest, most humane way to make sure a dog understands exactly what you're asking. Instead of just kind of a crude casting and hoping and yelling and being mad and all the kind of stuff that happens when you do not have those tools. Now, the same thing for you know, how do you get a dog to sit quickly? Because when a dog sits slowly, now we're probably talking a little bit more towards the competitive dogs or really serious kind of finesse type of hunters. But I don't know why anybody would want anything but a really swift sit. Because if you have a real slow sit and you're handling or running a blind, and you blow the whistle because they're, you know, 20 degrees off of where you need them to be, and they do a nice big loop, and now they've moved, they're 6 or 10 feet over to the right because they looped around and then turned around and sat. Now your 20 degree cast is more like a 45 degree cast. And so they're way off. And so the whole thing is kind of a big spread out, messy, sloppy kind of thing. Versus when they get a little, about 20 degrees off and you blow that whistle, they stop where they were. They stop where they were. Now, some dogs can stop super fast, and some dogs, if they're a little big, need another second or so, but that's all. And a quick stop keeps your blind nice and tight and neat and really efficient. But when you get the big loopy slow things, everything changes because the dog isn't where you wanted them to be when they stopped. And so in the place to do that is to never let that start. And when you do your basic obedience at your side, like I was talking about earlier, when you have a dog that's just starting this stuff and you say sit, they need to drop it right there quickly at your side. So I know when I talk about this rapid sit in basic obedience, I know people are looking at me like, geez, man, she's a little bit neurotic. And I'm not neurotic at all. I'm just real lazy. I want this to be easy later on. So you get that. They hear the word sit and they need to drop it quickly from the very beginning. And then you expand your obedience. So they're in front of you and they come to you and you tell them to sit on their way to you. Boom, they need to sit. They need to come around and heel up straight, sit rapidly. That rapid sit from the very beginning is your first step you want to take towards this. And any time you're doing stuff, when you start your pile work, because you want a dog that's going to handle, right? So now when you cast them to the right and left, not very far away from me, right? When you cast them and you do that stuff, they need to pop over, get the first available bumper, pop right back and sit down quickly. That dog's version of quick. Some dogs, that's really fast. Other dogs, it's less fast because they just can't move that quickly. So whatever is quick for that individual animal, they need to pop over there, get the first available bumper, come back, sit down real quickly. You maintain this attitude towards sit through all of your work. If you make it very consistent, then that will be the only way that that dog thinks about sit. So you do your power work and they pop over there, sit back down facing you, do the other direction. They, while you're doing all that stuff, and then, right, then you get them going to the back pile and you get in and go the whole distance. Mine's about, I don't know, 100 yards, something like that. So they go that whole way. And now we're going to stop them. And again, you get the go before you get the stop. Because if you get the stop before you get the go, then the way you've taught a dog to relieve training pressure is to sit. And that is not, when that makes forcing a dog to a pile very hard. Because there, you can't force them because they go, what? I'm supposed to sit down whenever you do that. So I'm not, that's a whole nother topic. Force them to the back pile, get them forced to the piles, get all that stuff before you start to sit. Because now we have the go. And once we have the go, then we come in there with a sit. And I don't do that with electricity. I do that with a rope. I switch over once they get it on the rope to the electricity. But I have them on a rope and they're going to the back pile, right? And then I blow that whistle and they hit the end of that rope. And if my timing is right, right? When they hit that, they hear the whistle, they hit the end of the rope, and boy, they are spun around and they sit down. And they're facing you. You have to have the timing right. If they're kind of generally loping out, and then you blow the whistle and there's still 10 feet of slack in that rope, you can't enforce anything. So when you're doing, beginning the set, after those guys are running like crazy, right, to that back pile because they've been taught, man, when she says back, I got to go. And then they hit the end of that rope, tweet, boom, they sit down. They are turned around facing you. And then throughout your work, you maintain that level of response, which is going to be identical to the level of response you required in your basic obedience. So that's how you get a dog to sit quickly on blinds and when you're handling, is to never let them know anything different. And then when you do that and you enforce it and you maintain your standard, then you don't have to go, how do I get my dog to sit faster? After I taught him not to sit fast. So again, I'm going to try and demonstrate a little bit of this stuff in some of my videos today. But that's, if you're having problems with how do I get them not to, this is the way to do it. It is to know ahead of time, what do I want? What are my expectations? What are my standards with this? And always be fair to the dog. No extra toughness, no anger, no high, hard one pressure. Teach and then enforce and hold the standard on everything, everywhere. And when you're not in a position to hold the standard, when you're not in the position to enforce things, like if your dog's not been through the swim by, you can't really hold them to the standard of getting in the water and staying in the water for handling, then don't do it. Get the, so that you're in a position to hold the standard, to enforce the standard, to be consistent, and then you won't have a dog that's doing stuff that you don't want them to do because you never let that situation arise. So that's applies to all this stuff. And again, if you look at any good professional out there, if you just watch them, not all of them talk as much as I do, but if you watch them, their whole program is based on the good guys not letting problems develop. You show the dog, this is what we want. This is what I want. This is how you do it. Now I'm going to hold you to it. I'm going to teach you, and then I'm going to hold you to it. And then you don't have the, how do I get him not to do something? Because you always showed him what to do from day one, from the very beginning, all the way through to the highest level that you're going to train to. So that's the answer to that stuff. And including, I'll just mention this last one in closing here, people whose dogs are really good unless they're around distractions. Always around distractions. the reason they're not paying attention to you around distractions is because you've never taught them that the only thing that they can do while you're working together is pay attention to you. That's what you have to show them. I don't ever train anybody's dogs and tell them, oh, he's really good unless there's distractions. I just don't have that problem because I'm not going to allow that to be a problem. I am going to show them through the kind of teaching and enforcement that I talked about on the sit and the heel. Boy, when I say sit, you need to sit. And when I say heal, you need to heal. And when I call you, you need to do it. And I'm going to have you thinking a lot more about that than anything else. And when you consistently do that, then the distraction thing just isn't a thing anymore. And the dog goes, oh, I got it. Here we go. We're going to be working together. And there's not that part of their mind that goes, but I'd really like to go over there where the other dogs are. We just take that out of it. Not by correcting them out of it, not by avoiding the problem and not going where the distractions are, but by showing them pretty much no matter what, guys, when we work together, this is what you're going to do. And I'm going to teach you and enforce it and then hold the standard. And it really is that simple. If you can isolate your own thinking down to that kind of simplicity, because that's where the dog is. So that's today's offering, just a half hour, kind of a short one. I know there's probably more people with a little bit more time right now than normal. But anyway, some food for thought on how do you get your dog not to do something. Find out what you did. Figure out where you taught them to do that. And then start back behind that and see if you can rebuild a new way of thinking on the part of that dog. So everybody, oh gosh, everybody, please stay if you can, stay in a safe place and get through this thing. You know, just praying for everybody that we all get through this and come out on the sunny side before it's too late. So I will be back soon, everybody.